Can you hear me? I think so. It's working, but not in a loud kind of way. Anyway, I have a loud voice, so that's not a problem. So I'm happy to be here. I was here 4 years ago with everything that happened, and I gave a talk on foreign memory API, and it was an incubating API in Java 14, I think. And so I'm happy to be here now to talk about the foreign function and memory API, which is a finalized API in Java 20, in the upcoming Java 22 release. So why did we do this API? The main reason is that the landscape around Java application is changing rapidly. With the rise of machine learning, Java developers often need to do tasks that they necessarily didn't have to do before, such as talking to highly optimized linear algebra libraries that are not written in Java, but they are written in C, C++, or Fortran sometimes even. And the only way to reach to those libraries sometimes is just to reach into native code directly. So these libraries will not be ported in Java most of the time because they keep changing. So a new library pops up nearly every month with a new kind of idiom in order to do offloading of computation to the GPU. So how do we talk to native libraries in Java? We do that with JNI. How many of you have used JNI in this room? Okay, fair number, so good audience. You know, with JNI you can declare native methods. Native methods are like abstract methods in the sense that they don't have a Java method body, but they have a body that is defined somewhere else in a C file or a C++ file, and it can be C, C++, even assembly if you like to play with it a little bit. JNI is flexible, but it has a little bit of issues in the sense that it's what we call a native-first programming model. So it pretty much focuses on giving you access to Java functionalities from the native side of the fence. So when you write in JNI, you realize that quickly you are basically shifting all your computational logic from the Java world to the native world in order to minimize the number of transitions back and forth. And that can be a problem. There's also no, I guess, idiomatic way to pass data to JNI. Yes, you can pass objects, but that has an overhead. Sometimes a lot of developers end up passing longs as pointer, as opaque pointer that are stored in some Java objects, and that kind of works. So the problem with native function is, as I said, they never exist in isolation. They always have to manipulate some data, and this data is often off heap, of course. And there are not very many libraries in the JDK that allows us to do off-heap memory access. One of them is the Direct Buffer API. So probably you are familiar with direct buffers. They can be passed to native methods, and there are some JNI functions that allows us to, for example, get the pointer that is backing a direct buffer so that the JNI code can manipulate the buffer directly. One of the issues with direct buffer, perhaps the main one, is that there is no deterministic way to free or unmap a byte buffer. So if you are done using your off-heap memory, you basically have to wait for a garbage collector to determine that the byte buffer is no longer reachable from your application, and that can have a latency cost. There is also a problem in the addressing space. The byte buffer API was born in 1.4 time, so quite a few years ago, and we only use ints as offsets there, which means the maximum addressable space is 2 gigabytes.
Minus one, yes.
With the advent of persistent memory, these limits are starting to be a little bit tighter. Also, there are not many addressing options provided by byte buffer. Either we go on the relative addressing scheme, where basically we say put in, put in, put in, and we rely on a mutable index on the byte buffer to keep track of where we want to store the bytes. But that's low because we have to mutate some state, and then C2 optimization have a little bit more trouble coping with that. Or we go fully explicit, and so we put offsets everywhere in our code, and that makes our code a little bit more brittle. So this is what happens when you want to access a native library. You have a client, you have a native library, you have some JNI goop in the middle. What's inside the JNI goop? Well, a little bit of everything. There are some native method declaration in the Java code. Then if you compile this code using Java C-H, you have to use a special option which will generate the site headers file that you need in order to implement your C JNI function. So you go over to C, you implement your JNI function, you compile that function, that C file, with GCC or Clang, compiler of choice, you get back a shim DLL. This DLL is not the library that you wanted to talk to in the first place. This is just some extra glue code that you need in order to get to the library that you wanted. So now you have two native libraries, the one you want to talk to and the JNI DLL. And that's a little bit suboptimal. So what we need instead is a Java-first programming model, so something that allows us to reach into native functions directly, only using Java code. We also need, since we want to model off-heap memory in a more sane way, we need a replacement for the bybuffer API, something that is more targeted at the use cases that FFI has. So we want deterministic allocation, we want bigger addressing space, we want better ways to describe struct layouts so that we can access memory more easily. And also we want to tie everything together, so we want to define tools that allows us to automatically generate bindings for native library in one shot. And we'll see a little bit about that later. Ultimately, our goal is not to replace existing frameworks such as JNA, JNR, for example. I think Charlie is going to talk about that maybe later. But to help some of those frameworks to overcome the workarounds that they have to keep doing all over again, because they don't have a proper API to deal with pointers, they don't have a proper API to free pointers when they are no longer used, and so hopefully some of this stuff is going to come handy in those cases too. So Panama is not just about the foreign function and memory API. Of course, that's a huge part of Panama, but Panama also contains the vector API, which is an ND API to access SIMD computation from Java code directly. But there's also Babylon, a project that recently sprang up, which allows us to see what's inside the body of a Java method with a nice IR that can be introspected using Java. So what can you do with Babylon? For example, you can take a Java method that contains a loop, for example, and you can inspect that loop, you can turn it into a GPU kernel, and then you can use FFM to dispatch that kernel using CUDA to the GPU. So Babylon and FFM kind of comes together and provides us a better and more robust solution in order to do on-GPU computing. The main abstraction when it comes to accessing memory is called memory segment. That gives us access to a contiguous region of memory. There are, of course, two kinds of memory segments. This is similar to bybuffer. There are heap segments that are backed by on-heap memory, and native segments that are backed by off-heap memory. All segments have a size, so if you try to access a segment out of bounds, you get an error. They have a lifetime, which means they are alive, but then after you free them, they are no longer alive. So if you try to access them when they are no longer alive, you get an exception. And some segments may also have confinement, so they may they may start in a thread, and they can only be accessed in the same thread where they started from. How do we use segments? Well, it's not too difficult. It's very similar to bybuffer. You can almost see the translation, the mechanical translation from the bybuffer API to memory segments. Let's say that we want to model a point that has fields X and Y. So what we have to do, we have to allocate a segment. We do that using an arena. We will see a little bit later what an arena is. But let's just go with me for a minute. We have to allocate a segment that is 16 bytes, because the coordinates are 8 bytes each. And then we put double values into each coordinates, one at offset A0 and another at offset 8. And that's how we populate the memory of that particular segment. So one of the issues that we have in this code, of course, is that we are using an automatic arena. An automatic arena is essentially providing an automatic deallocation scheme, which is similar to the one that is used by the bybuffer API. So we are not going to get any advantage here, but we can do one better. In fact, this is actually where we spend the most time designing the memory API. Java, as you all know, is based on the very idea of having automatic memory management, which means you only care about allocating objects. The garbage collector will sit behind your back and automatically recycle memory when no longer used. This is based on this concept of computing which objects are reachable at any given point in time. Problems with this approach is that computing The reachability graph, so which objects are reachable at any given point in time, is a very expensive operation. And you can find that garbage collectors, especially the one of the latest generation, the low latency garbage collectors, they don't want to materialize the reachability graph as often. So if you try, for example, to allocate a lot of direct buffer using ZGC, you will see that there's a lot more time before the buffer is collected compared to having something else that where you can actually deterministically release the memory. So that's a problem. Another problem is that the garbage collector doesn't have knowledge about the off-heap memory region that can be attached to a direct buffer. The only thing that the garbage collector sees is a very small instance, a very small byte buffer instance that is like, I don't know, 16 bytes or something more, but it doesn't see that maybe there are 4 gigabytes of off-heap memory attached to that, so there's no way to prioritize that collection. And also, garbage collector only can keep track of an object as long as if it's used from a Java application. So if that byte buffer escapes to native code, then it's up to the developer to keep that object alive across the native code boundary. So you have to start playing with reachability fences, and your code suddenly doesn't look as good anymore. So what we need is a new way to think about managing memory resources explicitly. And that's challenging because we are sitting on top of a language that made its success on the very idea of basically never worry about releasing memory ever, because the garbage collector will do it for you. So what we introduced was an abstraction called Arena. And Arena models the life cycle of one or more memory segments. All the memory segments that are located with the same Arena have the same lifetime. So we call this a lifetime-centric approach, because first you have to think about what is the lifetime of the memory that you want to work with. Then you create an arena that embodies that lifetime, and then you start allocating memory. There are many kinds of arena. Of course, there is the silly global arena that you can use, and basically whatever you allocate, it stays alive, it's never collected. There's the automatic arena, which we saw before, which basically gives us an automatic memory management scheme, which is similar to the direct buffer. But then there are the more interesting confined and shared arenas. These are arenas that support the auto-closable interface. So if you call close on that arena, all the memory that has been allocated with that arena will basically just go away deterministically. We don't need to wait for the garbage collector to do that. There are strong safety guarantees. Regardless of whether you are in the confined case or in the shared case, it's not possible for you to access a segment after it has been freed. And in the shared case, we had to do a lot of JVM black magic in order to make this work. Because, of course, you can think, well, we just put a lock. Whenever you access a memory segment, we'll check whether the segment is still alive using an expressive operation, and then you realize that memory access is like 10x slower than before. So what we did instead is, with the help of the GC team, we relied on some safe pointing mechanism to make sure that it is never possible to close a segment while there is any other thread that is trying to access the same segment. That works very well. Of course, it's a little bit more expensive if you need to close shared arena very frequently, but hopefully you won't need to do that. So what we are trying to do here is to find an happy balance between the flexibility of C automatic memory, deterministic memory management, where you have to do free and malloc explicitly. That's very flexible, but it's also very unsafe because you can have use after free, you can have memory leak, or the extreme safety of Rust, which comes at the expense of some flexibility when you try to code. Because if you want to do, for example, cyclic data structures in Rust, like a linked list, it becomes very, very, very difficult. So Java is trying to sit in the middle, and I think we've done a good job at doing this. So how do you work with explicit arenas? It's basically the same as with automatic arenas. The only difference here is that now we are using a try with resource statement. So we create the arena inside the try with resource block. We do the allocation, we populate the point struct, and then when we close the brace, all the memory goes away. So this is much better than the direct buffer counterpart, especially if you need to frequently allocate off-heap data structures, because we no longer put load on the garbage collector just to clean up the off-heap memory. So one thing that we need to still improve on this API is how do we access the fields of the struct that we want to operate with. In the example that I showed previously, we had to say, well, I want to access offset 0, I want to access offset 8, because we knew these were the offset where my fields are. But what if we could just declare what is the layout of the struct that I want to work with? What if we can translate the struct, the point 2D definition that we have in C, into some Java into a Java object that models the same layout? Then we can start asking interesting questions, such as, what is the layout of the field X or Y? Give me a variando for accessing the X field. And that's exactly what we are doing here. So instead of just relegating the definition of point 2D in a comment, we actually define the layout of the point struct as an object, as a Java object. And then we use this object to derive the two variandos, one for accessing the X field and one for accessing the Y field. Then inside the try with resources, we can just use the variando to access the field. So we don't have to specify the offset 8 for the field Y, for example, because the variando